Lady Anne has time in her schedule to meet with you. It's the best I can do at the moment.
The best you can do?
He took a step closer, his eyes not leaving hers. Clara was quite certain many people had quailed under that intense, probing gaze. People who saw only a powerful, ambitious duke and not a boy who had once been dared to dance.
Then, perhaps, Miss Heywood, you can give me the answer I came for.
She lifted her chin and met his gaze coolly, without flinching. And is there a question? His lips thinned.
I'd like to know what it is that you think you can give to my sister that an army of expensive governesses and tutors could not. I could not answer that question. My man of business could not answer that question, nor could he explain how my sister had managed to forge my signature on no fewer than 2 bank drafts directed to you that he failed to notice. So here I find myself forced to ask the very woman with whom my sister hatched her diabolical, secretive plot that brought her to Dover without my knowledge.
Clara felt her brows shoot up to her hairline. You think... She stopped. Ah. She supposed it wasn't an unreasonable conclusion to jump to.
That is not an answer, Miss Heywood.
No, I suppose it isn't. Clara looked up at the sky, trying to frame in her head the answer he sought before she spoke.
Is she well?
That snapped her attention back to the Duke, the note of genuine worry in his voice making something inside her melt. For Holloway's all-powerful, devil-may-care reputation, it was obvious that the Duke cared very much when it came to his sister. "Lady Anne is very well, Your Grace," she answered. "She is also intelligent and capable and, as it turns out, quite ingenious."
"She is."
There was a note of pride now, and Clara felt another part of her melt. "You should know that I was unaware that you were unaware," Clara said steadily. "Of Lady Anne's intentions, that is. Bank drafts weren't the only document she signed on your behalf. It would seem that she deceived us both." Holloway raked a hand through his hair and muttered something under his breath.
"Then it appears that I owe you another apology, Miss Heywood."
Clara shook her head, thinking that the Duke suddenly sounded weary beyond measure. "Had I known, I would have encouraged her to share her plans with you."
"Encouraged? Not insisted?"
Clara gazed at him, considering. "Tell me, why do you think she hatched a diabolical, secretive plot that brought her to Dover without your knowledge?" She watched with some fascination as a muscle in Holloway's jaw jumped and he looked away.
"I couldn't begin to tell you."
It came out harshly, but there was a certain unhappy vulnerability in his answer that tugged at her.
"I was hoping you knew why she felt she needed a finishing school, and one so far away from London."
Holloway wasn't the first man to question the value of Haverhall. Past experience had taught Clara that there was a fine balance in what peers wanted to hear when it came to their wards. The prevailing attitude that women's natural and often hysterical tendencies prevented them from understanding any sort of higher education had to be minded. Even if, after all this time, it made her want to kick something. Or someone. But Clara had long since learned to use that attitude as a shield, presenting a curriculum that was as familiar as a receipt from a Bond Street modiste. Painting, music, dance, language. A smattering of the geography and history of Kent to justify the travel. Most men nodded and accepted her practiced pitch, either indifferent or more interested in making sure their wards were visibly part of something exclusive and elite than in what those wards might actually accomplish. The Duke of Holloway, however, was not most men, and he would not be so easily placated. Clara let a heartbeat pass and picked her words very carefully. "I might suggest, Your Grace, the appeal for Lady Anne lies in the collaborative aspect of many of our classes, something that a private education with governesses may not be able to provide. I like to think that the presence of other like-minded young women offers a unique opportunity." Holloway was frowning, gazing past her at the facade of Avondale.
"Lady Anne is not a dandisette, interested only in whether her latest bonnet should be trimmed in feathers or fruit. She's..."
He trailed off, and Clara watched in fascination as he struggled for words. She didn't dare interrupt.
"I confess, I often don't understand her," the Duke finally said. "But I do know that she is... exceptional."
Clara already knew this. It had been evident in Lady Anne's interview when she had first applied to Haverhall. It was why she was here at Avondale. "I'm glad to hear it." Clara focused on keeping her tone light, "because I believe she will find herself in good company this summer." She paused, wondering just how much he wanted to hear, wondering just how much she could safely tell him. "I also believe that Lady Anne will find herself adequately challenged. I think she will not only learn a great deal in her tenure here, but will be able to contribute significantly as well." He was silent for several seconds.
"Did you know you are very good at answering a question without providing any real information at all?"
he finally asked. His eyes returned from the house to clash with hers.
"Perhaps I should get you to teach a class to my stewards on negotiation."
"I didn't realize we were negotiating," she replied warily.
"Everything in life is a negotiation, Miss Haywood."
Clara fell silent for a moment, gathering her thoughts. Perhaps Holloway was right. This program, this very school, is the legacy that was left to me by my parents, she started. I have made it my life's work to ensure that each one of my students gets the attention and education that she deserves, your sister included. And to that end, I hope that you will see the value in Lady Anne's remaining here for the duration of her term. The Duke leveled an appraising look at her. Clara did not look away. Somewhere near the house, a carriage rattled across the drive, and a horse whickered.
"I was told that you were tutored in Latin and Greek by Oxford dons that your parents hired,"
he said abruptly.
"Is that true?"
"Yes." She saw no reason to lie.
"Why?"
Clara hesitated, unsure what he was after, but it seemed as if the Duke of Holloway was doing his best to peer beneath the surface, beyond her explanations and careful delivery, looking for something more, and discovering whatever he found lacking. "Why were you?" she asked instead of answering.
"I beg your pardon?"
"Why were you tutored in Latin and Greek?"
"Because it is part of the education required for a gentleman."
"But not for a lady?"
"I didn't say that."
His fingers were tapping slowly against his thigh.
"But what good could it possibly do you?"
"I imagine the same good it does you, Your Grace." He stared at her. "Do you use it in correspondence? Everyday conversation?" she asked pleasantly.
"Of course not."
"And neither do I. But a mastery of those languages opens up entire troves of philosophy, wisdom, and tales of those who became legends. It would be a shame to miss such learnings from the past when so many of the same lessons can still be applied to the present. Don't you agree?" He was frowning at her again, his eyes narrowed, his dark lashes shadowing the blue of his eyes. "Are they something that you wish Lady Anne to be introduced to? Latin and Greek?" Clara prompted.
"No. Yes."
Holloway's brows were knit, and he looked as unsatisfied with his non-answer as she was. Clara remained silent, still unsure what he wanted from her, unsure what he was looking for in this labyrinth of a conversation where every step Clara took felt like a trapdoor waiting to spring. She needed to redirect this conversation. "Where are you staying, Your Grace?" Clara asked. "I'll make sure Lady Anne sees you tonight, even if I have to drive her myself." "You are right. I think it is the least that she owes you."
"That won't be necessary, Miss Haywood."
"But I thought that..."
"You won't need to drive her. I'm staying here."
Clara felt the bottom of her stomach drop to her toes. It couldn't possibly be serious. "I'm afraid there's a mistake," she said. "Haverhall has let Avondale House from..."
"The Earl of Rivers, yes, yes, he told me. He also told me that there are more rooms in this pile than anyone could possibly find use for, and a vacant dower house that begs habitation. And he asked me to confirm that things were ship-shape for you."
"The condition of this house and its staff is exemplary," Clara said, trying to keep the alarm out of her voice, "as is documented by my brother at the beginning and end of each of our stays. At the Earl's request, that documentation is delivered directly to him for review. I suspect his steward does the same thing, though at more regular intervals. I can't imagine why he would require you to be quite so redundant." Holloway shrugged.
"You'll have to ask Rivers the next time you see him."
"I can't allow you to stay in this house, Your Grace." The Duke frowned. And so did Clara. "You'll be a distraction," she said, trying to take some of the heat from her voice and regain her composure. She would not be goaded into raising her voice, certainly not to one of her clients. Even if he was a duke, acting in the most illogical, insufferable manner. "To the students? To your sister?"
"To me."
Holloway made some sort of derisive noise.
"I had no intentions of partaking in any of your classes. I will be away most days. You won't even know I'm here."
He paused.
"Think of me merely as Lady Anne's chaperone."
This could not be happening. Clara could not allow it to happen. She squared her shoulders. "The Earl's two widowed sisters live here. If their matronly presence isn't enough, there are 9 students, the 3 ladies' maids who travelled with us, the substantial staff who look after this house, and my sister and I. The girls are well chaperoned. They are here to learn, Your Grace, not to entertain themselves frivolously."
"A frivolous entertainment and a distraction. Well, I suppose I've been accused of being worse."
"You mistake me, Your Grace." Clara could feel her fingers curling into her skirts in her effort to remain patient. "That's not what I was implying."
"It was a jest, Miss Haywood,"
the Duke said with a smile. And it was a smile that reached his eyes, not the practiced, contrived one she had seen when he had kissed the back of her hand, but the one that had once set her heart pounding, the one that now made her breath catch and wiped her mind clear of every rational thought.
"I already know what it's like to live with one young lady," he told her, his eyes still gleaming. "I have no intention of tossing away what's left of my sanity by moving in with 8 more. I'll stay in the dower house."
Clara fought to catch her breath. "You're still a distraction. You are a duke, and you don't need me to tell you that you are handsome, rich, and very, very unmarried. And..."
"An extraordinary dancer."
"And a shameless fisher of compliments." She was aware that a grin was starting to creep across her face. He held up a hand to stop her.
Your commitment to the reputation and care of your students, including my sister, is admirable.
You exaggerate.
I do not. You took a duke to task over an abominably asinine request. It doesn't happen nearly as often as it should.
A decidedly unladylike snort escaped, despite her.
You have that many abominably asinine requests?
Clara knew she should simply nod and smile politely, but somehow he was drawing her into this banter that she had no business participating in. And it was exhilarating.
You might be surprised.
He grinned, and her pulse immediately skipped. You know, she said, returning his grin, I don't think I would. Something shifted in his eyes. Something hot and possessive. Something that made her knees weaken and an ache settle low in her belly and her breasts.
There she is,
he murmured, almost inaudibly. Who? Your Grace? She could feel the blood pounding through her body as he gazed at her. His eyes were searching her face, a strange, yearning expression on his. He reached out, and for a heart-stopping moment, Clara thought he was going to stroke her cheek. Instead, he grasped one of the stubborn, unruly curls that invariably escaped from the knot at the back of her head, and tucked it behind her ear.
The girl who once waltzed with me.
She could feel the heat of his fingers as they brushed her skin, and she shivered. Every fibre in her body demanding that she step closer to him, step into his heat, and find out what it would feel like if he did truly touch her. Because the way he was looking at her now was infinitely more intoxicating than the way he had gazed at her before. This time, admiration mingled with desire. She stepped back slightly. That girl grew up, Your Grace. I am no longer given to impetuous impulses, just as you are no longer given to imprudent suggestions. Things have changed a great deal, and both of us along with it. Holloway's hand dropped.
True.
Clara cleared her throat, unwilling to let whatever this was go any further. Above all, she must remain professional. He was the brother of one of her students, for God's sake, a client. If she was going to continue as the headmistress of Haverhall, or if the worst happened and there was ever going to be a hope of resurrecting her school later, she could not dally with a duke. Her reputation, like it or not, was her currency. No one in their right mind would ever send their gently bred daughters to a school in which the headmistress was known for her amorous escapades with one of the most visible, sought-after men in England. Will your business here take you long, Your Grace? She steered the conversation back to safer ground.
Trying to get rid of me so soon?
He wore a smile again, but it was the practiced one she loathed. Clara kept her expression neutral. Merely curious, Your Grace. What she needed to know was just exactly how long he might linger and where he might show up, either accidentally or purposely. And the faster he could get what he had come to accomplish completed and be away from Dover, the better. For everybody. She ignored an unacceptable and perilous twinge of disappointment.
While the Earl of Rivers has insisted that I stay at Avondale, he has also asked for my assessment on the current condition of the estate's crops and livestock,
Holloway said. I see.
This was not good.
Not good at all. She did not want a duke, specifically this one, on the property prowling about indefinitely. You should know that the Dower House isn't entirely vacant, she said, aware that she was grasping at straws now. My brother stays at the Dower House when we are here. Holloway nodded, and instead of inconvenienced, he seemed almost pleased.
Yes, Rivers mentioned as much, but that dower house is as palatial as Avondale itself. I've been told that it has 8 bedrooms, 2 drawing rooms, a music room, and even its own small ballroom. I don't think we'll be tripping over each other, but as I'm sure Lord Strathmore is also a busy man, I will endeavour to stay out of his way.
Clara grimaced. Clearly there was nothing she could say that was going to deter him. What do you know of crops and livestock? A last effort, and one that might be interpreted as rude or insolent, but she no longer cared.
I've educated myself on the basics, he replied.
Why?
You ask that a lot.
Yes, she replied unapologetically. You are, of course, under no obligation to answer. He considered her for a moment.
Because I own a great deal of land, and crops, and livestock, and I like to understand what I possess.
The glibness had gone out of his voice, replaced with a cool bluntness that rang of truth. Clara felt a shiver race down her spine. The Duke of Holloway was a man who needed to be kept at a safe, proper distance, and the Dower House was definitely not far enough.
"Is Lord Strathmore here?"
Holloway asked.
"I should like to inform him of my presence, so he isn't unduly surprised to find himself with a tenant."
"He is here, in Dover, but not at Avondale at the moment. He was, in fact, with 3 of her students somewhere in the parish, seeing to the community's medical needs."
"I understand that your brother is an accomplished physician,"
the Duke remarked, as if reading her mind. "He is." Clara had no idea how much Holloway knew about her brother. Of course he would be aware of Harland's training, that wasn't a secret. Certainly not after Harland's wife had complained loudly about it to anyone who would listen for the duration of their miserable marriage.
"An admirable profession," he offered into the silence.
"Not everyone would agree with you. Most would tell you gentlemen are not meant for such common foolishness." Clara tried to keep the derision out of her voice, but she wasn't sure she succeeded.
"Only a true fool would believe that a man who has the knowledge and skills to help a soul cheat death could ever be considered foolish."
August's eyes were shuttered, and in that moment Clara knew he was thinking about the circumstances that had made him the Duke of Holloway. Spotted fever, she had heard, which had completely wiped out 2 entire generations of Faulkners summering near Bath. August and his sister, who had been in London at the time, had been the only 2 survivors. "I'm sorry about your family." Her words seemed inadequate. He started, as if surprised that his comments had been so transparent.
"Thank you,"
he shifted,
"and my condolences on the loss of your parents."
Clara nodded and looked away. It was unexpected. They had been aboard a packet destined for Boston that had been caught in an Atlantic squall. All crew and passengers had been lost.
"It always is,"
the Duke mumbled, almost inaudibly. "Yes," she agreed sadly, wondering how this conversation had become so melancholy.
"You are fortunate that your brother has so ably taken the reins of the barony's business. He must be an incredibly busy man."
"He is busy," she replied, happy to let Holloway direct the conversation away from death. "But he manages."
"A tough enterprise, shipping,"
he mused.
"One fraught with risks and unpredictability."
He had no idea. "You own ships as well, Your Grace?" Holloway shrugged.
"I dabble. I have a fondness for Virginian tobacco, as does half of London. Owning the occasional shipload of it makes me a popular man."
Clara almost rolled her eyes. "Then I must assume you've educated yourself on the basics of that as well?" He shrugged again.
"Of course. As I said, I like to understand what I possess.
Well then, you and my brother will have much to discuss.
I'm counting on it, Miss Haywood. I'm also counting on his ability to play a decent hand of whist or loo if he has the time,
he continued.
Dover can be quite dull.
August? The demand came from just behind Clara. She turned to find blue eyes a shade softer than Holloway's, flashing with poorly concealed ire and not a little apprehension. What are you doing here? Chapter 6. August felt every muscle in his body stiffen, but he forcibly reminded himself what was really at stake here. He bit back his instant acerbic accusations and fought the urge to stuff his impetuous wayward sister in a burlap sack, fling her over the back of a horse, and take her back to the safety of their London home. Instead, he arranged his features into what he hoped was a mask of cool detachment. He gazed at Anne, taking in her flushed face and snapping eyes. She hadn't a leg to stand on when it came to righteous indignation, but he had to admire the fact that she had gone on the offensive. Gutsy, that. Instead of looking chastised, she looked as though she wished to run him through.
You're looking well, Anne. I'm pleased to see you survived the journey from London no worse for wear.
He kept his voice pleasant.
Imagine my surprise when I discovered that you were no longer residing in our house.
She had the grace to redden. I left a note.
You did?
With instructions. Instructions that you were not to follow me.
Indeed. Though, had you thought to share your plans with me, I might have given you a ride here. As you may recall, I have interests in Dover that require my attention from time to time, the present being one of those times.
Anne was staring at him as if he had sprouted a second head. You're not angry with me?
Oh, I didn't say that, dear sister.
August avoided looking at Miss Haywood. God only knew what she was thinking. Anne now looked positively mutinous. Well, I'm not going back to London with you. Her mouth was set in a hard line. I'm sorry for whatever inconvenience I might have caused, but I intend to stay. I do not require your supervision. I am perfectly fine on my own without you interfering.
You'll be relieved to know that Miss Haywood has also conveyed the same.
August replied, frustration at her resentment rising, despite his best efforts.
It is not my intention to interfere with anything, though I might suggest that your manners are slipping. I'm not the only one I think you owe an apology to.
Anne coloured again, and August met Miss Haywood's dark, measuring gaze. He stared stonily back. Miss Haywood, Anne said quietly, I apologize for not being truthful with you, and I apologize for my behavior just now. I was just surprised to see my brother here.
That would make two of us,
Miss Haywood replied easily, turning to address her student. Apology accepted. And you should know that I am also well familiar with older brothers who do things that defy reasonable explanation. A reluctant smile pulled at the corner of Anne's mouth, and August felt the muscles in his jaw tighten. I trust that you enjoyed your first day? Miss Haywood inquired. I did. It was incredible. There was an instant, blinding animation on Anne's face that August hadn't seen in, well, forever. It made her eyes sparkle and her cheeks flush, and a dimple appear on the side of her wide smile. He stared at his sister, unable to look away, but she didn't elaborate on what it was that she had found so incredible. Nothing he had ever given her, no gown or slippers or jewels, had ever come close to eliciting such a reaction. I'm glad. Miss Hayward inclined her head, a small smile playing around her lips. She didn't offer an explanation either. I should go in, Anne said into the silence that had fallen. I do not want to be late for dinner, and I still have today's reading assignment to complete. She looked at August then, a clear challenge in her soft blue eyes, as if defying him to stop her.
A good idea,
he said. Anne bit her lip, suspicion shadowing her features as if his answer had come too easily. And maybe it had, but for now he needed to be at Avondale, and it was better that Anne was here with him than left to her own devices in London, regardless of how that had come about. Here he could keep an eye on her and make sure she was safe while pursuing his own ambitions. He supposed that he should be grateful that his sister hadn't taken it into her head to see Italy or Siberia.
Thank you, August, for being reasonable.
She was still looking at him as if she half expected him to implode.
When am I not reasonable? He replied, scowling.
Anne started to speak, and then seemingly reconsidered.
Thank you, Miss Hayward, she offered in lieu of whatever she had been going to say. I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow. And good night, August, she added in a courteous tone. I hope your business goes well and doesn't take long.
She headed toward the house, and August watched her walk away from him, her posture ramrod stiff.
I apologize on behalf of my sister, Miss Hayward, he said as Anne disappeared into the house without a backward glance.
Do not make me accuse you of being redundant twice in as many minutes, Your Grace. Lady Anne already apologized. Her words were light and held no judgment.
Still, she should never have deceived you.
Or me. Miss Hayward shrugged. She's still young. I suspect she acted as she did because she felt you didn't trust her.
Trust her?
To conduct herself in a manner that meets your approval. August stared at Miss Hayward aghast.
Is that what you think? Is that what she thinks?
I can't answer for Lady Anne, but I do think she is fortunate to have a brother who cares as much as you do. She had done that neatly, softened her refusal to answer his question with a compliment meant to distract and flatter. It was a ploy he used regularly to get what he wanted, usually information, and it was a curious sensation to be on the receiving end.
That's not it at all. He shook his head. It's Anne who doesn't trust me.
Trust you to do what?
To take care of her.
Why did he need to state the obvious?
Be more specific.
What?
The question threw him. What, specifically, is it that you believe you can do for your sister that she cannot do for herself? Again, there was no judgment, only curiosity, and her words held shades of the question he had asked her at the very beginning.
I can protect her from every manipulative, greedy bastard who will wish to use her for his own gain, to get to me or maybe just my money. I can make sure that the spiteful gossip that is the currency of the temps never touches her.
He stopped abruptly, aware his voice had risen. Miss Hayward's non-committal sound was almost as discomforting as his outburst.
What's supposed to mean?
He had no idea how he'd managed to be drawn into this conversation, but he seemed powerless to retreat from it now. Keeping in mind that I too have a brother, who cares very much about both my sister and myself.
Just say whatever it is that you're going to say.
It was rude, but frustration had eroded his patience. Very well. She didn't look offended, or even surprised. You can't control your sister.
even though I understand that your motives are honourable.
I don't want to control her,
he snapped.
I want to make sure she makes the right choices that will ensure her happiness. This role she's found herself in, one of the sister to a duke, does not come naturally to her.
How so? August threw up his hand. This was absolutely none of Miss Haywood's business, but he had been the one to bring it up, and there had been something strangely cathartic about the torrent of words that had escaped. Whether he liked it or not, Clara Haywood was going to be Anne's teacher for the foreseeable future. Perhaps she would be able to talk some sense into Anne.
She holds herself aloof from the other young ladies of the ton, makes no effort to blend in socially, takes no interest in her future.
He shook his head.
She refuses to believe that if she doesn't make the right choices, her happiness cannot be guaranteed.
I see. And what exactly are the right choices required for happiness?
The same as anyone's. A place in society, a good, sensible marriage.
August stopped suddenly. Miss Haywood's expression hadn't changed, nor had she uttered a word, but something in her dark eyes had shifted. There was unmistakable disappointment there now. Ah, you don't want her to end up like me.
That's not what I meant. That's not at all.
I understand, Your Grace. You don't wish your sister to be the oddity at the ball, tolerated because of a title, or perhaps because of her wealth, or both. You do not wish Lady Anne to be the girl who gets asked to dance only on a dare. She said it with not a trace of self-pity. August took another step toward Miss Haywood, needing to say something that would erase the disappointment he'd seen in her eyes. Needing to say something that would ease the regret that had settled heavily in his chest. That feeling that he was losing something. That something was once again slipping through his fingers. Returned. God, he was making an epic mess out of this.
Do not put words in my mouth, Miss Haywood, because that's not who I see when I look at you.
The force of his words made her eyes widen.
I see an intelligent woman, the same one who once put an ignorant buck in his place and taught him that things are rarely as they seem. I wish I had understood that then.
And what would you have done differently if you had? She asked quietly.
I would have asked you to dance again.
August reached for her hand and caught it, bringing it up between them, his thumb sliding over her bare knuckles.
I wish I had asked you to dance again.
She was silent for a long minute, a gut-wrenching, electrifying mix of desire and longing flitting across her usually unreadable features. Her fingers tightened on his. I wish you had too, she said, and August felt the breath leave his lungs. She had told him once that regrets were nothing but excuses, but he was having a hard time recalling what excuse had prevented him from kissing this woman witless, what excuse he might think up to prevent himself from doing it now. All he had to do was catch her face in his hands and dip his head, capture her lips with his own and be done with wondering what might have been. Be done with regrets and excuses, and take control the way he should have a very long time ago. He gazed at her, the sinking sun kissing her skin a golden colour and setting fire to the mass of thick tresses that had surrendered to the breeze and defeated their pins. A curl she had so valiantly tried to stuff behind her ear trailed down the side of her face, the end drifting to touch the skin near the lace-trimmed edge of her bodice. He found his eyes slipping over the gentle swell of her breasts, concealed by her modest gown. The deep colour of it was the perfect foil for her fair skin, and for a brief second he wondered how she might taste if he pressed his lips to the delicate shadow of her cleavage, her throat, and then her lips. Wondered again what would have happened if he had kissed her that night, a decade ago. Wondered what would happen if he did so now. His gaze stalled on her mouth. Her lips were generous, the upper slightly more voluptuous, begging for attention and stirring all sorts of erotic thoughts far south of his brain. She had never looked more touchable, more perfect. The air between them had thickened, crackling with tension and anticipation. And then she stepped back, pulling her hand from his, and he almost cursed out loud as a mask of pleasant neutrality dropped over her features. "You speak of marriage being a requirement for happiness, Your Grace, yet you yourself remain unwed. So I might see where Lady Anne remains sceptical of your decrees." August felt his lip curl in distaste.
"I am well aware of my duties to the Duchy, Miss Heywood. When I choose a bride, it will be a sound financial and business decision, as all good marriages should be."
"So, you're holding out for an heiress?" She sounded both cynical and amused.
"If that is what it takes. I've seen what happens when people marry because they believe themselves in love. And it isn't pretty. Contrary to the opinions of poets, love does not conquer all."
"Your sense of romance is overwhelming."
"I do not have the luxury of believing romance and marriage to be the same."
"And what about your sister?"
"Anne will have respect and admiration, financial security and social standing. Those are the foundations necessary if love within a marriage is to be achieved. And I will make sure she has those things."
"And what does she have to say about that?"
"It doesn't matter."
"I might suggest that your sister needs a brother, not a dictator," Miss Heywood said evenly, in that damnably composed way of hers. He took a deep breath.
"I'm not her dictator. I'm her protector."
"I fail to see the difference in this case."
"Anne is not you. You are stronger than she is,"
he said. "Then you underestimate your sister, Your Grace." August looked away. How the hell would she know that? She didn't truly know Anne, not the way he did. This was all so impossible.
"What is she reading? The assignment she mentioned?"
August asked abruptly, knowing that this change of topic was wholly transparent and not caring. He might not be able to control everything. The rise and fall of the tides was a bit beyond him, but there was no excuse for prolonging an ill-advised conversation he never should have started. "I'm sure it's of little interest to you."
"Then you'd be wrong."
"It's titled Marriage," Miss Heywood said with a measure of irony.
"I've not heard of it."
"No, I don't suppose you would have. I received my copies shipped from Edinburgh only last week."
"A Scotsman wrote it?"
A small smile played around Miss Heywood's lips. "No, a Scotsman most assuredly did not write it."
"I don't understand."
"You don't need to, Your Grace. As you pointed out earlier, you are not a student of the Haverhall School for Young Ladies, unless, of course, you feel the need to determine what Lady Anne is and isn't allowed to read while she is under my tutelage." She said it genially, but August could hear the steely challenge beneath. Dictator indeed.
"Of course not."
"I'm glad to hear it. You are welcome to read it yourself if you like. I can have a copy sent over to the Dower House." She hesitated. "Perhaps that would give you an alternative topic of conversation in which you may engage your sister." August frowned. He didn't need any more of Miss Heywood's advice when it came to Anne. He'd already disclosed far more than was wise, and he did not like to give anyone any kind of leverage.
"No, thank you. I'm quite sure that I'll have other things that will occupy my time."
like focusing on the real reason he was here. Because he didn't accept failure. Failure was for weak people like his father.
"Would you join me for dinner?"
he asked. He needed to get back on track, start making some inroads with the Haywards that didn't involve his own family tribulations. "I beg your pardon?" Miss Haywood stared at him, those liquid brown eyes widening in startled uncertainty and a beautiful flush creeping into her cheeks. August tried not to be too pleased.
"The invitation, of course, extends to your brother, and your sister, too, if she's so inclined. I am, after all, trespassing somewhat, and it's the least I can do."
And it was something that the Duke of Holloway did when courting an investment. Invite the stakeholder to his club or to his home and lavish him with good food and better liquor. An expensive strategy, but one that invariably paid off in spades. It was easy to disarm his next prospective opportunity when he was drunk on extravagance. Though he suspected that none of the Haywards would be impressed with such extravagance, especially since it had been part of the demise of their fortunes, an obsession that had cost their parents almost everything. No, the Haywards would require something a little different, yet no less memorable. "I'm afraid I'm going to have to decline, Your Grace."
Wait, what?
He stared at Miss Haywood. Damn it, why was she making this so difficult? A dinner invitation from a duke seemed to be something the rest of society fell over itself to accept.
"Why, is it a requirement that you eat with your students?"
She frowned. "Not at all. In fact, I try to give them space to socialize amongst themselves. They'll see enough of me in the coming days. But I do make it a point to be available the first evening to ensure they've settled in and address any concerns and questions."
"Tomorrow, then?"
"Your Grace,
you need to eat. Why not with me?"
He was not taking no for an answer.
"There is a tavern on the north side of town that serves excellent lamb with mint and an even better selection of wines. The kind of wine that has the privilege of being crafted in France."
"The Silver Swan."
"You know it?"
"Yes," she said slowly.
"Good. We'll take an equipage from Avondale. How does 6 o'clock sound?"
"It sounds delightful, but I don't think—"
"I insist. It's the least I can do in return for your gracious hospitality, and, of course, Lord Strathmore's."
He smiled in his most disarming manner.
"Even if he doesn't know it yet."
Miss Haywood gave him a weak smile, and he could see her teetering on indecision, no doubt weighing the consequences of refusing a duke a request, though a request that was not asinine, but entirely proper and sincere, at least on the surface.
"I promise not to dare you to dance, or do anything else that would give your brother leave to put a bullet hole in my coat."
She laughed then, a low, musical sound, and it was as if the sun had broken through a cloud. Her eyes crinkled at the corners, and August thought that time might have stopped for the briefest of moments. He had never in all his life wanted to kiss a woman as badly as he did right now. He thought he might ask her to dinner every night, just to hear her laugh again like that. Until he remembered he was not asking her to dinner to woo her. He was asking her to dinner to extract whatever information he could from her and her family to use to his own advantage. Potentially. He was disturbed at the guilt that instantly stabbed at his conscience. August reminded himself that he wasn't deceiving her. Not really. Further to his purchase of the school, he was simply exploring a mutually beneficial opportunity, even if the Haywards didn't know it yet. And there was no room in good business for guilt. "In that case, I thank you," she said. though she had moderated her smile, and now it was simply one of polite acceptance. That would be lovely. Chapter 7. The library at Avondale House was a thing of beauty. Someone, or more accurately, a long line of someones, had taken great pains to select and assemble a stupefying collection. There were manuscripts centuries old, and aside from the glimpse into the past they provided, the hand lettering and illuminations made them works of art in their own right. There were treatises on agriculture and veterinary care, books about the creatures of the world and the exotic lands in which they were found, collections of maps and drawings. There were entire shelves of novels, plays and poetry, and dissertations on history and politics. Clara rather thought she could live out the rest of her life in this room and not be unhappy. The staff, efficient as always, had pulled the curtains from the tall windows that lined the south side, and the early morning sunlight flooded in to reveal a cavernous room that was positively gleaming. Three long tables were positioned in the centre, each with lanterns and candelabras resting on its polished surface, and each with a collection of beautifully matched chairs surrounding it. Larger, upholstered chairs were scattered around the grouping, fairly begging a body to curl up within their comfort with a good book. It was this room that had been the deciding factor when Clara had gone looking for a house to let for her summer program. Well, that, and the fact that the Earl of Rivers had gifted them the use of Avondale. Apparently, he was exceedingly grateful to her brother for his attention to, and treatment of, his many ailments, and he had offered his Dover estate to Haverhall as a favour, which pleased Clara to no end. Many other homes had spacious and refined accommodations and efficient and capable staffs, but none had a library like this. Her students spent a great deal of time here, and Clara wondered if the elderly Duke of Rivers truly comprehended what a treasure he possessed in this house. It was one of many that he owned, though it had been years since he'd been well enough to make the trip to the coast. Clara wandered over to a pretty rosewood writing desk positioned in a sunbeam, and ran her hand over the smooth surface before picking up a delicate glass inkpot. It, like everything else in the library, was in a state of readiness, sparkling and newly filled with ink. She would have to add a footnote to Harlan's report and express her appreciation of the dedication and attention to detail that the staff... "Was that the Duke of Doxies I saw you speaking to in the driveway last night?" Clara jerked and nearly dropped the inkpot on the immaculate rug under her feet. With great care, she replaced it on the desk and turned. "Rose, I didn't hear you come in." She eyed her sister, who was leaning just inside the door, her arms folded over her chest, a cynical smirk twisting her delicate features.
"I gathered."
Rose stepped farther into the library, and the sunlight coming in through the window set alight the loose strands of strawberry blonde hair that rested along her cheek.
"Was I correct?"
Clara frowned. "About what?"
"The Duke of Doxies, here, down in Dover."
Rose paused.
"I feel like that could be the beginning of a very fine limerick."
Clara frowned at Rose's tone. "The Duke of Holloway is indeed in Dover," she said evenly, "and yes, I was speaking to him."
"Why is he here? Spying on his sister?"
"Quite possibly."
"Lady Anne, it seems, failed to mention to the Duke that she would be spending the summer here with us when she made the required arrangements. He discovered her plans only after she left." Rose's elegant brows lifted. I'm beginning to like Lady Anne more and more.
Clara sighed.
Let me guess. His Grace stomped all the way out here to drag her back to London?
Clara sighed again.
Worse. Worse? What could be worse?
He's here to stay.
At Avondale.
Rose's voice was an octave higher than usual.
At Avondale, Clara confirmed.
Why? Surely he can spy from a distance.
The Earl of Rivers has requested that he evaluate the property, lands and stock and such.
Now?
Rose looked horrified.
When is he leaving?
I don't know.
His presence is rather inconvenient, don't you think?
We'll work around it. Clara tried to inject some confidence into her words.
He invited us to dinner tonight.
Dinner?
Rose cocked her head, seemingly unimpressed. How does that improve anything? And have you forgotten that this man once tried to make a fool out of you? I was there, if you recall.
Good Lord, Rose, that was 10 years ago.
And I remember very clearly that he behaved like a damn swine.
A great deal has changed since then. Clara scowled.
And when you're done with my sister, Cersei, I'd like her back so that I can have a civilized conversation.
Rose unfolded her arms and sighed.
Fine. I apologize.
Thank you.
So did he, you know. She hadn't told Rose the details of the conversation she'd had with Holloway in the museum, and she didn't care to examine the why of that too closely.
Who?
The Duke. Apologized for his actions that night. Rose leaned on the back of a gold and blue brocaded chair.
Was he drunk?
She speculated into the silence.
When he apologized, I mean.
That he was drunk back then is rather a given.
He was not drunk now or then,
Clara replied evenly. I would imagine he apologized because he is no longer a boy. He is a man, willing to take responsibility for his actions and make amends for those that may have been unwise. He has been nothing but a perfect gentleman.
She winced inwardly, wondering if her defense of the Duke sounded too fervent.
A perfect gentleman.
Rose's smirk returned.
That's not how I've heard him described.
Clara pinned her sister with a quelling look.
By whom?
She regretted that question the second it was out. For their purposes, it didn't matter if the Duke of Holloway was the devil himself in disguise, or if he danced naked around bonfires, fornicating with the Queen and her entire court, so long as he stayed out of their way.
Rose raised her hands in mock defense.
The ladies who have graced my old London studio, not that anyone was complaining, she said. On the contrary, his rumored lack of gentlemanly habits between the sheets was being extolled.
She let her hands drop and ran her fingers over the stitched braid along the back of the chair.
Discussed at great length.
The ladies who frequent your studio should pay heed to the fact that their conversations are probably not as private as they would like to think,
Clara admonished, trying to ignore the heat that had suddenly ignited deep in her belly.
Rose sniffed.
I'm just the humble artist. If I repeated everything I heard, I would probably be accused of being a spy and hanged for treason by half the members of Parliament, the House of Lords, the Army, and most definitely the Navy.
Sailors are a sentimental lot when it comes to wives and mistresses, and wishing to have a memento in their image. It's intriguing what secrets pass for pillow talk.
I'll take your word for it. Clara made a face. I've never done a portrait, boudoir or otherwise, on behalf of the Duke of Doxies, Rose mused. Holloway.